Hello, everybody. I'm Warren Smith, coming to you from Charlotte, North Carolina.
And I'm Natasha Cowden in Denver, Colorado, and we'd like to welcome you to the Ministry Watch podcast.
On today's program, General Episcopal Theological Seminary thought it had found a solution to its financial problems. That is, until seven bishops intervened, saying that they don't want to be in a partnership with a conservative. We'll have some details. And the controversial Pastor Mark Driscoll got booted off the stage at last weekend's Stronger Men's Conference after calling out the conference host for his choice of entertainment. And Chuck Swindoll steps down as senior pastor of his church, but he insists that he is not retiring. He'll continue to preach the majority of the sermons there too. We'll take a closer look.
But first, Calvin University finds itself at the center of a lawsuit with its former president.
When Calvin University hired Wiebe Boer as its new president back in May of 2022, the school signed the former business executive to a lucrative five-year deal. The hope was that Boer, a Calvin alum and the son of missionaries, would turn the prominent evangelical school around after years of budget cuts and enrollment declines while easing the tensions with the denomination that owns the school.
So what happened?
Well, those goals were possibly getting met. It seems that they were working out for a while. Enrollment went up, and in January, Boer announced an ambitious plan for Calvin's future. However, less than 2 months later, things started falling apart. In mid-February, Boer resigned after the school's board received complaints that he sent unwelcome and inappropriate messages to the employee of one of the school's vendors, an employee that worked on campus. When confronted by the board, Boer did agree to step down, leaving the campus in some turmoil with anger and confusion over how things had gone wrong so fast.
And that anger has led to Boer being locked out of the school's presidential residence and a lawsuit.
On Friday, April 11th, Boer and his wife Joanna filed suit against the school in federal court, alleging that Calvin violated his employment agreement and defamed him, and that the school failed to pay him $400,000 in severance or to prove that he had in fact engaged in significant misconduct. Under the terms of his employment agreement, Boer was considered an at-will employee and could leave the school or be fired at any time. However, unless the board ruled that Boer was guilty of serious misconduct, he would receive his $400,000 salary for a year after leaving.
And remind us what Boer was accused of.
Well, in the complaint, Boer's attorney stated that he exchanged text with an employee of a college vendor for several weeks in January, but he also denied that the texts were inappropriate. They also claim he was given little time to defend himself, and he agreed to resign rather than be fired if he could keep that severance and help shape the messaging around his resignation. But he says neither happened, according to the complaint, at least. Instead, the negotiations broke down, and Boer and his family were locked out of the presidential home, as you just mentioned, Natasha, even though the kids were still in school in the Grand Rapids area. The complaint asks for lost wages and bonuses, compensatory damages for mental anguish and emotional distress, as well as other punitive damages.
Well, next up, an Episcopal seminary nearly found a solution to its financial woes, but there's a catch.
Yeah, there is. General Episcopal Seminary in New York, which some people consider to be the flagship seminary of the Episcopal Church, has been having real financial trouble for the last few years, but it looked like there was a plan where it might be able to be saved. It would require, though, that the school would accept help from a conservative donor. And seven liberal/progressive bishops within the church were calling the donor's beliefs into question and, in fact, said it was a deal breaker for them. The deal would offer a long-term lease from the seminary to a nonprofit group called the School of Sacred Music. And this is where it gets a little complicated. The School of Sacred Music has a major donor who is a conservative Catholic who holds to the Catholic Church's historic positions on gender and sexuality. And earlier this year, these local bishops, who, by the way, have no direct authority over the school, and local government officials learned that the School of Sacred Music had hoped to sign a long-term lease. And those bishops, they were from New York and Long Island, issued a statement saying that we are concerned by the lack of full acceptance of the LGBTQ stance of its founders and the lack of transparency in its funding.
Tell us more about why they don't want to lease the school.
Well, the seven bishops who opposed the lease said that they understand that the seminary is facing financial challenges, but they say that issues of inclusion are more important to them.
However, conservative church watchers say that these seven bishops are more concerned about making an ideological point than doing good for the church and for the community.
Yeah, that's right. Jeff Walton, in particular, is someone that we reached out to here at Ministry Watch. He's the Anglican director for the Institute for Religion and Democracy. And he told us that this lease arrangement with General Seminary would seem to be a win-win for tenants and the landlords who can continue to see their property appreciate in value. But the bishop's objections to the arrangement are further evidence that the Episcopal Church progressives are their own worst enemy.
Our next story involves murder accusations against four members of religious anti-government group God's Misfits.
On April 16th, the Office of the Oklahoma Chief Medical Examiner confirmed that two deceased victims that had been recovered in a rural Texas field were, in fact, two missing persons, 27-year-old Veronica Butler and 39-year-old Jillian Kelly. An affidavit from the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation, OSBI, says that Kelly and Butler went missing back on March 30th while on their way to Eva, Oklahoma, to pick up Butler's two children. Police later discovered Butler's abandoned car in Texas County, Oklahoma, with signs of a violent struggle in and near the car. Kelly was the wife of Pastor Heath Kelly of Hugoton First Christian Church in Hugoton, Kansas, and she was the mother of four.
Do we know who killed them?
Well, on April 13th, police did arrest some suspects. They arrested Tiffany Michelle Adams, along with Adams' romantic partner, Tad Collum, and two of their friends, Cole and Cora Twombly. The group were all charged with two counts of first-degree murder, two counts of kidnapping, and one count of conspiracy to commit murder in the first degree. Investigators say that the two women were victims of a conspiracy to murder them over a custody battle involving Butler's two children.
And how are these suspects linked together?
Yeah, that's a good question because, you know, up until now, this just looks like a horrific tragedy, of course, but, you know, why would we be interested in it here at Ministry Watch? Well, according to the Associated Press, all four of them are part of an anti-government group called God's Misfits. They also claim to be a religious group, and they regularly met in the home of Cole and Cora Twombly. The Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation spoke to Cora Twombly's teenage daughter, who said that she overheard the four suspects plotting to murder Butler and Kelly. Twombly's daughter described God's Misfits as an anti-government group that has a religious affiliation.
Well, Warren, we're going to take a quick break here. When we return, megachurch pastors John Lindell and Mark Driscoll get into a public altercation at last weekend's Stronger Men's Conference. I'm Natasha Cowden, along with my co-host Warren Smith. We'll have that story and much more after this short break.
Hey, everybody. Warren Smith interrupting the podcast for a very special message. You know, a couple of years ago, I met a man named John Adink, who I was really impressed with because he was very generous and very knowledgeable about foreign missions. He had a heart for missions, a heart for reaching unreached people groups, and he had the ability to give significant sums of money to missions organizations. But after doing that for several years, he had something of an epiphany and realized that a lot of the money that he was given was being wasted. And he wrote a book about that experience called How I Lost $1.5 million in Missions. You know, if you're a donor to a foreign missions organization, maybe you support a missionary, maybe you're a ministry leader of a missions organization, or perhaps a pastor, elder, or deacon that supports missionaries through your church, you really should read this book. We'll send it to you absolutely free as our thank you for a gift of any size to Ministry Watch this month. Just go to ministrywatch.com and hit the donate button at the top of the page.
Welcome back. I'm Natasha Cowden along with my co-host Warren Smith, and you're listening to the Ministry Watch podcast. In our next story, mega church pastor Mark Driscoll gets booted off the stage at the Stronger Men's Conference after publicly criticizing the entertainment opening night.
Driscoll was speaking at Pastor John Lindell's church. It's James River Assembly of God. That's in Springfield, Missouri. They were hosting the Stronger Men's Conference, which they say was founded to empower men to rise up, bold and courageous, standing strong, and determined to live out God's purposes for their lives. However, this conference was not exactly like the Promise Keepers rallies that you might be used to. The annual gathering features plenty of biblical exhortation, but also a lot of over-the-top entertainment. The opening night's entertainment had been a smorgasbord of bull riding, motocross BMX racing, boxing, tanks crushing cars, and in one episode, a man ripped off his shirt, swallowed a sword, and swung around on a pole.
Well, that's a little different.
Yeah, it is a little different. And when Mark Driscoll took the stage on Saturday, he wasted no time speaking out against the man who was swallowing the sword and ripping his shirt off in what was what some people consider to be an overtly sexual act. It turns out that he wasn't alone in feeling unsettled by Alex Magala's performance and left many people wondering why such a display had to happen at a men's conference in the first place.
And the conference didn't stream this event, but the scene with Mark went viral on social media due to videos taken on people's phones.
Yeah, Driscoll said that he had spent many late night hours grieving over Magala's performance and praying for the attendees' mental and spiritual protection from what he called a spirit of Jezebel that had kicked off the weekend. Now, when he said that, the conference host, Lindell, began to shout, "Mark, you're out of line. You're done." To which Driscoll then responded, "Pastor John, I'll receive that." And then he left the stage. Lindell then walked onto the platform and denounced Driscoll for failing to notify him directly and privately that he had problems with the performance, referencing Jesus' teaching on conflict resolution in Matthew 18.
What happened next?
Well, there was a 30-minute break, and the two, Driscoll Lindell, spoke privately. And then they came back on the stage together. Lindell affirmed his affection for Mark Driscoll, and Mark Driscoll apologized. Now, by the way, Natasha, I've had a lot of people this week ask me what I think about this situation, and what we've tried to do here is kind of report what happened in a fairly straightforward manner. But I've decided to devote this week's editor's notebook to this situation so you can read more about, you know, what I have to think about this and what this situation tells us about what's going on in the evangelical church today by looking for that column, which should be on the front page of the website on Friday morning.
Well, Warren, our next story involves a brutal act of violence against a beloved pastor in Florida.
Yeah, a Miami-Dade church lost a beloved pastor and self-described community activist whose efforts were to model Christ in a practical way. It made him a symbol of hope in a part of the Miami-Dade area that was better known for corruption and poverty. Pastor Antoine Lenore, better known as A.D., was only 41 years old. He was found stabbed to death on Saturday, April 6th at Westview Baptist Church in Opelika, Florida, which is part of the Miami-Dade area, where he had served as senior pastor since 2009. The following day, police arrested a suspect, a homeless man that Pastor Lenore had been trying to help, and charged him with first-degree murder. An arrest report obtained by NBC6 in Miami said that James Dawkins stabbed Lenore multiple times in the neck without any provocation before fleeing on foot.
Is there any hint of why the murder happened?
Well, Ivanka Bryan, who is the victim's cousin, said that Pastor Lenore had been allowing Dawkins to live in the building. Dawkins apparently could play the keyboards as well, so he was playing in the church services. But Dawkins became angry with Pastor Lenore whenever the pastor said that he wanted to end the arrangement, that he'd been living in the church long enough. The attack occurred after Lenore went to the church with a locksmith to change the locks. There, the suspect allegedly confronted the pastor and engaged him in an argument that escalated to violence. Many leaders, community members responded to the tragic news by celebrating the life of the pastor, who leaves behind, by the way, a wife and four children.
Our next story involves a fugitive pastor who we have reported on previously. He was caught in Texas last week.
Yeah, just days after fleeing prosecution in Florida for charges of sexual battery, Monty Chitty, who is 62 years of age, was tracked down in Woodsville, Texas, where his adult son lives. He was arrested by members of the U.S. Marshals Service Fugitive Task Force and the Woodsville Police Department.
What are the accusations against Chitty?
Well, Chitty was pastor of First Baptist Church of Marathon, Florida, and he faces charges of sexual battery, lewd and lascivious molestation, and contributing to the delinquency of a minor. He's accused of serving a 15-year-old alcohol in his home until she passed out, and when she woke up, Chitty was allegedly assaulting her. Detectives said that he also sent lewd text messages afterwards. Now, Chitty denies the rape charges, saying that he was just helping her lay down to sleep. He was arrested on March 4th, released on a $75,000 bond 3 weeks later, but then fled. On April 1, he failed to show up for his scheduled arraignment. Currently, Chitty is being held in Texas on a $1.3 million bond while he awaits extradition back to Florida, to the Florida Keys, according to the Sheriff's Department.
Our next story also contains some troubling news regarding a traveling evangelist indicted for child sexual abuse.
An evangelist who is based out of Tennessee but had been traveling the country had already been arrested on multiple charges related to sexual abuse of children, and he's been indicted again by a grand jury. The man's name is Benjamin Garlick. He's 32 years old. He was arrested in September of 2023 after being charged with several counts of aggravated rape and sexual battery. Murfreesboro, Tennessee police have now said that he was re-indicted by a Rutherford County grand jury in March and faces additional charges.
And what are those charges?
Well, the list of charges includes 7 counts of aggravated rape of a child, 6 counts of aggravated sexual battery, 2 counts of sexual exploitation of a minor, and other charges. And I should add that his wife, Chantal Garlick, was also arrested in September alongside her husband. She's been re-indicted as well and is facing additional charges, including 2 counts of facilitation of aggravated rape of a child and other charges. She's out on bail, and by the way, she has since filed for divorce.
Now, Garlick was a traveling evangelist. Do we know where he went?
Well, not specifically, which has police concerned because they think there might be other victims in this case. But according to Murfreesboro detectives, Garlick and his wife spent the past several years traveling the country, focusing primarily on the Hispanic community. The full number of victims, how the couple knew them, or when the alleged rapes occurred is also still unclear. The Special Victims Unit detectives are urging anyone, particularly those in the Hispanic community, to come forward if they have any information or have had any interaction with these two individuals. Benjamin Garlick remains in Rutherford County Adult Detention Center. You may remember that I mentioned that his wife is out on bail. He is in the detention center on a $825,000 bond.
Warren, we're going to take another break, but when we return, our lightning round of ministry news of the week. I'm Natasha Cowden with my co-host Warren Smith. More in a moment.
Hey, everybody. Warren Smith interrupting the podcast one more time just to remind you that this month, the month of April, we are giving away a book called How I Lost $1.5 Million in Missions by John Adink. It's a book that I think everyone who has a heart for missions work should read. I think it'll help you become a more effective steward of the resources that God has entrusted to you, especially if you want to divert some of those resources to missions organizations. We'll send this book to you absolutely free as our thank you for a gift of any size to Ministry Watch during the month of April. Just go to ministrywatch.com and hit the donate button at the top of the page.
Welcome back. I'm Natasha Cowden with my co-host Warren Smith, and you're listening to the Ministry Watch podcast. Now, we like to use this last segment as a sort of lightning round of shorter news briefs. What do you have first?
Up first is the story of Beverly LaHaye. She was an influential conservative activist and the founder of Concerned Women for America. She died on Sunday at a retirement home in California. She was 94 years of age. Her husband, Tim LaHaye, was a well-known pastor and co-author of the wildly popular Left Behind series, but Beverly LaHaye was a force in her own right. In the 70s, the LaHaye started Family Life Seminars, offering 8 lectures on the biblical principles that God gave to guarantee happiness and fulfillment in a Christian home. And that film series or lecture series sort of launched her in her activism. In 1978, she became a political activist. In 1979, she founded Concerned Women for America, which has been super effective in influencing change and in the political sphere especially. In fact, President Ronald Reagan said that Beverly LaHaye was one of the powerhouses of the conservative movement and that she was changing the face of American politics. Now, LaHaye's death follows that of her husband, Tim LaHaye, who died in 2016, and her son, Lee, who died back in 2017. She's survived, though, by 3 children, 9 grandchildren, and 20 great-grandchildren.
And what's our next story?
On May 1st, evangelical pastor, author, and the host of the Insight for Living radio ministry, Chuck Swindoll, has said that he will step down as senior pastor of Stonebriar Community Church, which is in the Dallas suburb of Frisco. The announcement was made by the elders of the 3,700-member church that Swindoll founded in 1998. But, and this is where it gets interesting, Natasha, the elders insist that the 89-year-old man is not actually retiring. The elders of the church said, "Senior Pastor Chuck Swindoll will take on the role of founding pastor, and our friend, Dr. Jonathan Murphy, will join our staff as senior pastor of Stonebriar Community Church." But, they said, Swindoll will continue to preach as much as he desires and is able, and he will continue to serve as an elder and mentor to the senior pastor. Now, I should add, though, that this news comes after a series of medical setbacks for Chuck Swindoll, who suffered a fall last year, battled low blood pressure, and took time away from preaching this January while recovering from a heart procedure.
Who's in our ministry spotlight this week?
The ministry spotlight this week focuses on Aglow International, Natasha. They have a donor confidence score that fell from 87, which is one of our highest scores, to 62, which means that you should give with caution. A key reason for the fall in its rating is the fact that it has stopped making its Form 990s available to the public. It's petitioned the IRS to be reclassified as an association of churches. And because of this, Aglow's transparency grade also fell to a D, which is one of our lower scores. They do, however, make audited financial statements available, and you can see their overall revenue on both our website and the Evangelical Council for Financial Accountability's website. According to its website, Aglow is an international organization of women and men in more than 170 nations, presenting biblical principles as a solution to the challenging issues of our time. It offers a number of different ministries, including prayer groups, missions, trips, resources, and conferences.
And who did Christina highlight in Ministries Making a Difference?
Well, one was an organization called Rural Compassion. It's an Assemblies of God ministry to rural pastors, which is badly needed these days. Through their partnerships, the ministry is able to provide encouragement and practical help by making quilts, high-quality bows, and grass-fed beef to pastors in rural areas who sometimes face isolation, anonymity, and financial hardship. We're also taking a closer look at Lads to Leaders, which is a ministry of the Church of Christ denomination, and it saw attendance top 10,000 people at its Nashville convention over the Easter weekend. It was the largest of about a half a dozen sites around the country, and also the largest since the COVID-19 pandemic. Students, parents, and coaches swarmed the Gaylord Opryland Resort and a convention center to compete in various disciplines such as speech, song leading, and scripture memorization. I should also add that my friend, reporter Bobby Ross Jr., covered that convention, and he said the present and, yes, even the future of our church never looked so bright. And we also want to mention Convoy of Hope. We report on Convoy of Hope pretty regularly here at Ministry Watch because they're doing great work. We also want to acknowledge now, though, that they're celebrating 30 years of ministry this year. Convoy of Hope originally started by a local community outreach in partnership with other local organizations, now has become a national, even a global organization, and it's feeding programs, agricultural training, and business development in countries all over the world. In October of 2023, it opened a new $61 million headquarters on 240 acres, all debt-free. By the way, Convoy of Hope has a 4-star financial efficiency rating and an A transparency grade, a donor confidence score of 74, which means that you can give with confidence. These are among our top scores.
Warren, do you have any final thoughts before we go?
Yeah, a couple. I just wanted to mention that I was in Indianapolis last week meeting with donors and others there. And next week, I'll be in Lexington, Kentucky for the annual meeting of the Evangelical Press Association. It'll be my honor to present a Lifetime Achievement Award posthumously to Joel Bells, the founder of World Magazine, and also a friend and mentor to me and an avid supporter of Ministry Watch. I won't be able to do any donor or reader events when I'm in Lexington. Time will be a little bit tight. But if you happen to be at the EPA conference, I sure hope you'll say hello. And I want to remind everybody that we're offering an important book this month to everyone who donates to Ministry Watch. It's called How I Lost $1.5 million in Missions. It's by a man named John Adink. If you are a donor to a foreign missions organization, if you're a ministry leader, maybe a church pastor with a missions budget, you support missionaries around the world, I really think you should read this book. We'll send it to you absolutely free as our thank you for a gift of any size to Ministry Watch this month. Just go to ministrywatch.com and hit the donate button at the top of the page.
The producer for today's program is Jeff McIntosh. We get database and other technical support from Stephen DeBerry, Rod Pitzer, and Casey Suddeth. Writers who contributed to today's program include Bob Smetania, Jessica Ederalde, Tony Matter, Christopher Mann, Bethany Starin, Daniel Ritchie, Brittany Smith, and Christina Darnell. And you've been listening to the Ministry Watch podcast. Until next time, may God bless you.